I've been noticing something recently. I've been noticing this trend and how many of us, if not most of us, are interacting with each other. Whether at the grocery store or during coffee hour, briefly catching up with others at work, or with other parents awaiting for pickup after school or practice, or in common spaces shared by our living communities, it's an interaction that normally goes something like this. Hi, how are you? I'm good, good, busy. So busy. Yeah, you? Me too. So busy. Crazy busy. You know, it's just that time of year. Been there? And maybe that's true. I mean, it really is a busy time of year. School starting, schedules reconfigured, and even if your life is no longer directly impacted by the school year, there's still something in the air that shifts in September. The full energy of the harvest, fall, I mean, it's practically Christmas already. But I also hear and personally engage in this very kind of catch-up conversation that circles around busyness throughout the fall and also during the holidays and the new year. Well, then there's everything that happens in the spring and then May, forget it. Summer seems really busy too. It's just that time of year. Then there are the moments, maybe it's back at the checkout line at the grocery store when you run into someone you know. Maybe you don't know them really well, but you know a little bit about their family. You know about their teenager who is struggling, their parents' slow decline. And they know a little about you, too, your recent rediscovery of oil painting after many years caregiving for your spouse after a cancer diagnosis. You catch each other's eyes as you slowly choose the same checkout line, initially doing so because it was the shortest. A part of you now wanting to pivot and hop to the neighboring line unseen. You're just not feeling up for a conversation, but it's a little too late. Gretchen maybe has been there. Placing your basket on the paused conveyor belt, they jump before you get the chance. Hi, how are you, busy? All in the same exhale, as if there's no space for a different answer. Yeah, you say, crazy busy. It's just that time of year, you both agree. It's true that some level of busyness is unavoidable, whether it's the season of life you're in, or whether you have no other choice but to work two jobs, sandwiched between two generations on either side of you that you are some way caring for. That's all very real. And yet, if we let the conversation end there, we're missing something looming underneath. Something large and even maybe a little dangerous. And so why are so many of us so busy? And why has it become the thing we talk about when we see each other? And what does it say about our capacity for connection? I'll say up front that I've been the person at the grocery store, likely last week, and probably the week before that. And I've had more than one person in my life close to me say in recent days after I shared this sermon topic, they said it with words or sort of like with their eyes, oh, you're preaching on being too busy. So, all that to say, I am in the struggle with you. Yes, there is so much work to do. There is so much life to live, things to be made and built, carpooling to coordinate, classes to take, skills to develop, places to see, justice to make, an endless list of importance. But busyness is different from being active. Busyness is frenetic, always a little distracted, always a few steps ahead of or outside of what is actually happening in the present moment with yourself and with those around you. The confounding thing about this crazy busy trend to me is that it seems somewhat easy to get sucked into and to defend, and yet it is absolutely one of the factors keeping many of us from cultivating relationships of connection. Our culture of busyness makes relationships of connection suspiciously impossible. Social scientist, researcher, storyteller Brené Brown puts it like this: being crazy busy is a great armor. It's a great way for numbing. What a lot of us do is that we stay so busy and so out in front of our life that the truth of how we're feeling and what we really need can't catch up with us. Because when we stop moving, even for a moment, we're vulnerable to the truth of our lives. When we stop moving even for a moment to be present to what is happening for us and those around us, we risk feeling things that we don't want to feel. When we're vulnerable, when we show ourselves to each other, when we make it personal, we risk rejection, shame, fear. And so most of us, understandably, are like, no thanks. I'd rather not feel any of those. So I'm going to build this sturdy armor around my heart and keep on moving. But the thing is, vulnerability is also the only road to love and belonging and joy. The problem is, as Brown shares, the problem is, as I learned this from the research, she points out that you cannot selectively numb emotion. You can't say, here's the bad stuff. Here's vulnerability, here's grief, here's shame, here's fear, here's disappointment. I don't want to feel any of those. I'm going to insert numbing strategy. Food, alcohol, scrolling, hands-free Netflix, overworking, most of us have something. The busyness shield keeps us from getting hurt, yes, but it also keeps us from being seen. Vulnerability, Brown says, is having the courage to show up when you don't have control of the outcome. It's the courage to be seen. And vulnerability is not actually about purging or indiscriminate disclosure of your life in the checkout line, but it is about relationship and intention. Brown's research participants, when asked what vulnerability is to you, shared, "Vulnerability is the first date after my divorce. It's trying to get pregnant after my second miscarriage. It's sitting with my wife who has stage 4 breast cancer, making plans for our toddlers. It's getting fired. It's firing someone. It's coming out to my Christian parents. It's saying, I love you, first." It all reminds me of the first summer I was a chaplain. It's part of the process of becoming a minister. You train and serve as a chaplain at some point along the way. I was with five other students that summer at a large hospital, two rabbinical students, women, one evangelical student, a Catholic priest in training, and a Buddhist Christian. We had 1 week of training before being ushered off to our respective hospital units and floors, where we were asked to knock on doors, mostly unexpected and unannounced. We'd knock, enter with an opening like, "Hi, my name is Kristen, and I'm one of the chaplains," which sort of often terrified people when I would come into the room. It was like cold calling with a collar. And my chest tightened that first morning on our own. I made my way up the elevator, definitely considered taking the stairs to stretch out the time. I didn't feel ready, prepared, capable. I wanted to somehow study more, practice more, learn all the possible ways these conversations could go first. I was not interested in the uncertainty or risk in any of it. And we were basically given one tool, reflective listening, which is just as it sounds. Someone shares how they're doing, and you respond using some of the exact same words they used. So, for example, someone says, "I'm feeling really anxious about my upcoming surgery," and I would respond with, "It sounds like you're feeling really anxious about your upcoming surgery." By your laughter, I was also a little suspicious of this tool at first. It seemed woefully inadequate and very transparent. But I will say, in all of my time doing chaplaincy work, I only had one person once ever say to me, "Did you just say what I said back to me?" Every other time, it was actually highly effective. It's so simple, yet highly effective as a practice of listening. But back to that first day on my own in the elevator, sort of wishing the elevator would get stuck to run out the clock of the day. Each time right before I would knock on the door, I'd get that tremor of vulnerability. Have you ever had that in your body? It can feel like heat in the body, or tingles, or that chest tightening, nausea even. Like some signal from my body saying, danger zone, risk of rejection ahead, uncertainty, abort mission. And of course, all of those messages can happen in a split second. That first week, I got into the habit of knocking, lightly entering, noticing that someone was watching TV or eating, maybe reading, and quickly saying, "Oh, looks like you're busy. I'll come back later." Sitting down with my supervisor at the end of the second week of this, she was curious about the number of people I attempted to visit without having a conversation. "Oh," I explained, "yeah, a lot of people are really busy." "Busy? As in their care providers are in the room?" she asked. "Not exactly," I answered. We went back and forth like this for a few moments when she finally said, "Kristen, they're not busy. They're waiting for someone to ask them how they are and for someone to really listen to the answer." And she was right, of course. I realized I was almost hoping people would be busy so as to not enter into that arena of vulnerability, as Brown terms it. And in so doing, had eliminated the possibility of connection and care. But there's more to all of this. There's more to the big and small ways we hide behind busyness or use it as a shield. Brown's research reveals that most of us guard against vulnerability not actually because we're afraid of rejection or shame, anxiety, or uncertainty. We guard against vulnerability because we're terrified to feel joy. Because if we allow ourselves to feel joy, we risk it being taken away and feeling the pain of loss of no longer having it. According to Brown, joy is actually the hardest emotion for us to experience as humans. It's the hardest as in it's the most vulnerable. And so we literally leap out of it. She gives the example of a parent gazing at your baby in a crib, heart pouring out, a moment when you feel almost overwhelmed by the love you have, and just like that, in a split second, you're imagining something terrible happening to them. Or it's after work, things seem to be okay, your family is fine, your relationship with your partner is good, but they're late coming home, and like that, you've replayed multiple disasters that have befallen them. Brown shares that when we lose our tolerance for vulnerability, joy becomes foreboding. We lose our capacity to stay in that vulnerability tremor in our bodies. When we become so out of practice, we are losing our capacity to experience connection and to experience joy. Vulnerability has a real physiology. It's something we experience in our bodies. The feeling, the sensations are likely different for you than they are for the person sitting next to you. But how can we soften into that sensation, whatever it is, instead of fleeing? Instead of erecting our armor, how can we stay a few moments longer in these sensations? Whether it's back at the checkout line, or it's with your spouse in the kitchen, your child in the car, the warmth, the heat, the tingling of vulnerability rises. Stay. Right there, for just a few more breaths. You don't need to fill it up with words or things just yet. Just rest a moment during the pause at the bottom of each exhale. During the silence, in between each word. Sink into the blank space on the page. Because perhaps softening into vulnerability isn't about making some huge, massive life adjustment, but beginning by staying a few minutes longer in this stillness. So how busy are you right now? And do you really need to be, honestly? Is it possible that you're in motion in these ways because if you were to pause for a moment, that thing you have been avoiding feeling will show up? And someone else might see it. Come back. Stay a while in these ordinary moments. Grow intimate and familiar with the ways your body reacts and experiences vulnerability. Stay just a moment longer and see what happens. Yes, it might be pain that waits there to be felt, but it might also be joy. And the road there is the same. Amen. May it be so.